Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there's a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? For the next few episodes, we'll be doing something a little special here on Music and Booze with Mo. It is my tropical summer of cocktails. I've never made a secret of my love for tropical and tiki. I love wearing flowers in my hair. I always have. I grew up by the beach. Surfing was a big part of my life. Tiki naturally fell in line with all of that. And tiki is going through quite a resurgence, revival. There are many, many things going on in the tiki world and the tropical world, so I took it upon myself to talk to various friends and colleagues and new friends about their lives in the tiki world, and it's been tons of fun talking to these folks about their tropical creations and such. So join us for the summer as we have Mo's Tropical Summer on Music and Booze with Mo. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers located in the Sunset Junction area of Silver Lake. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated selection of spirits, and one of the most impressive collections of bitters anywhere. That's Barkeeper in Los Angeles. Check them out online at barkeepersilverlake.com, or better yet, just head on down to the store. Last year, I was lucky enough to meet Scotty Shooter, the owner of Dirty Dicks in Paris, which is a fun tropical slash tiki bar, depending on who you ask. He will call it both, and he is a very, very spirited, fun human being, and a very good human being, who had grown up in Los Angeles, found his way to the Bay Area. We never crossed paths there, but lived there at the same time, and then went on to make it to Paris, France, and make a name for himself in the cocktail world. He's one of the creators of the so delicious, that it's actually part of its name, OFTD Plantation Rum. If you've never tried it, oh, it's so, so good. And we sat around in New Orleans last year at the Carousel Bar in the Hotel Montelion talking about all kinds of things, like, I don't know, music, live bands, tropical stuff, traveling the world, a lot of talk about weed, so tune in if you want to hear more, and you know you do. So happy to get to have this sit down with Scotty Shooter, who I've seen so many times since then. It started a friendship, and I'm super happy about that. Really good guy. Enjoy this one, because it's real darn sweet, and man, don't be afraid of the F-bombs.
So, all right, let's start the real thing then. So, we are sitting in the Carousel Bar at the Hotel Montelion, and introduce yourself.
My name's Scott Shooter. I own a tropical cocktail bar in Paris called Dirty Dick.
So you call it a tropical cocktail bar?
Not tiki bar, for sure.
Is it a tiki bar? I've been there. I mean, I think of it as a tiki bar.
It is. It's a collective of our family. Everyone who's worked there since we've opened and who continue to work for us. We work as a family. It's our representation of what we'd like to keep the tiki culture going. It's our contribution to keeping it alive and what we perceive, you know, to do what we, you know.
Have you always been a tiki guy? How did you fall into the tiki side of cocktails?
I actually fell into tiki.
I have to say, like, for those of you who can't see, Scotty has a tattoo. Sorry, I'm saying Scotty, that's my friend. I have a friend I grew up with. You have a tattoo, like a teardrop tattoo, but it's a pineapple.
Yes.
Which is so dope.
Because we murder pineapples by the day. You know? We really do. We kill a lot of pineapples every single day. It's insane. It should be a crime in some countries.
But again, I'm sorry. I did interrupt. I had to point out just how tiki as fuck you are. But yeah, how did you fall into the tiki side of things?
The very first time that I can remember that, apparently, like, when I was two, My parents lived in Las Vegas, and I used to run around the, is it Trader Sims? Is it Trader Vic's that was there at the time?
Yeah, it was Trader Vic's.
And they would drink, and even my grandparents, so maybe it goes back to when I was in the womb, I'm not sure.
Right?
But when I remember it, I was in Las Vegas, actually, and a bar called Frankie's Tiki Lounge had just opened. So I went to my brother's house, and I seen these crazy vessels, and I'm like, that's really fucking cool. What is that? He's like, oh, this is a tiki mug. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, yeah, you put cocktails in this, you know? I'm like, what? I want to go check it out. Let's go to this bar.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've been there before.
Yeah.
It's in the middle of the fucking desert. Like, super sunny. It's just this little, like, building that's dark with no windows on it. And as soon as I open the door, you go from the contrast of sunlight to complete darkness. And your eyes can't, like, for a few minutes, you can't really...
Yes, you walk right into that tiki.
You can. And then so my eyes start, and I get these wafts of, you know, tropical scents. Also, you know, funky, you know,
funky
old beer
foods,
and beer, but...
The dive bar smell.
Yeah.
Mixed in with the tropical smell.
It is, you are allowed to smoke in there, too, so it's a little part of it. But so my eyes started to adjust, and I saw these crazy sculptures. There's a lot of shag stuff in there, and I was instantly intrigued, like, what is this? What is going on here? I stepped to the bar. I ordered a zombie, and I think I had maybe two, and I was just blown away. And I wanted to know more about what this is, so I started the research. And of course, Mr. Jeff Beachumberry's books. I started reading that, and I got Sven Kirsten's Book of Tiki. And then I just became this obsessed, and I'm, you know, reading up as much as I can online and just histories. And it comes from really close to where I'm from, actually, the Mojave Desert. So I felt a certain connection that way, too, like a spiritual connection. And then I really wanted to open up a tropical cocktail bar in Paris and be able to do, you know, like Don said, real bring the tropics to you. Yeah.
Well, the whole idea with tiki is... escapism, fantasy,
yeah, exactly.
All of that. So, you know, even though he opened the first one in Hollywood, which is the capital of escapism and fantasy, and is also a beach town, you know, it's funny that that was the thing. It was like, come into this tropical hideaway and get away from it all. So
everybody needs escapism
right?
All the time.
Yeah, and in fact, that's what a bar is anyway. I mean, the bar is, it should be... it's a place where you can go away and it's your home away from home, or just to take a break from your work or your family or wherever you need to get away and kind of put yourself in a different environment for a little while where you can feel welcome and comfortable. That's what a bar to me is. And the trappings all change, right?
Well, and in tiki too, I mean, you're in there, a lot of people who've never been, they're trying these exotic flavors, rum, very strong rum cocktails.
Yeah.
And just, you know, immerse, and, you know, we have these crazy statues or paintings, the lights are low. And people are like, what, you know, and then you just instantly forget, I think, even more as, not all bars, but some, you know, bistros and that, you would get more just like lost. And then, you know, as once the rum starts to kick in and you're talking with somebody, you just, you know, I think it really takes you to another place. You know, I think that's a, it's something you can't really replicate in most other bars. Some, yes, but I think but in a tiki bar for sure.
For sure. So how long have you been working in bars?
I've been working, I would say, almost 18 years bartending. Yeah.
Did you start when you went to Paris? Is that when you started working?
I moved to Paris when I was 21, so I was just old enough to drink. I left Oakland.
Yeah.
I actually lived, I think, maybe 5 blocks from where the original Trader Vic's was. I used to live in North Oakland.
Oh, I didn't know you were an Oakland guy.
I lived in San Francisco first. I had a dog. I was in love. We couldn't keep the apartment. All the prices went up, and they still are to this day. I mean, we're 19 years later.
I lived in the Bay Area from 1987 to 2001.
Okay.
And then from 2011 to 2014. So I've seen those changes.
I was there 95 to 90, the end of 98.
So we were there at the same time. I was living in the East Bay.
I moved over because we couldn't get a house. We moved to North Oakland. We stayed there for a while.
Yeah.
The 53rd and San Pablo.
Yeah, so
it's basically
really
Emeryville.
Yeah,
which is crazy. I probably walked past it a gang of times.
It was by the Oaks, I think, right?
They've redone it, apparently. I haven't been...
I thought it was just a big empty lot where it was.
No, I think it reopened. I'm not sure.
So anyway, you wound up going to Paris.
I got my girlfriend pregnant. Like, I was selling snowboards at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't have health insurance. She didn't have a job. Or maybe she did, but we didn't have any money.
Yeah.
We went to the first doctor appointment, and it was like $400. I'm like, and that was just to say... With the ultrasound, like, babes, like, how are we supposed to fucking afford this?
Yeah.
So her family lived in Paris, and so let's move to France. We'll have the baby, and then, you know, move back eventually, and that didn't happen.
Stayed. Yeah, everybody's just still there.
And it didn't work out between me and her, but it was either you stay in a foreign country, yeah.
Is he still in France?
He's turning 19 next month.
What a trip, huh? Mm.
So it was either stay or leave, and I chose to stay, and I started, it was actually a glassboy at the beginning. And bartending in France doesn't have the same, I don't know what's the word, merit. You don't make any money, basically. You make some minimum wage. Even back then, you didn't even know how much you were making. They pay you in cash, rip you off, and it was, it's a fun job, it's a tough job, and I loved it since, as soon as I got behind the bar, I loved it. Every part of it, like, it's a very fun profession.
But you just were like, I gotta make this, I gotta own my own place.
After some time, I always wanted to, but after some time, you want to, if we fast forward to this, we're like, I really want to do this, but how am I going to do it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a lot of money. My family definitely doesn't.
How did you do it?
I saved up every penny I had. I worked my ass off at a job where I talked to the owners and I said, I'll make you a percentage. How much money can you make? So they put me on a percentage. And I really fucking smashed it hard. Like, we had this bar called UFO. It was a rock and roll dive bar. It was amazing. It's still fun.
Nice.
And we just, you know, I have one of the staff from there, even two, who moved on with me. Eventually, are still with me at Dirty Dick now.
Yeah.
And that's when it all started. I put in a little cocktail program. I started building up a little rum collection at this bar. And...
So
how am I gonna do it?
For yourself at this bar, basically.
I wasn't really trying to do that. I was just trying to inform myself. I was paying my way to all the bar shows, to BCB, as I still kind of do.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just trying to learn as much as I can, go to different countries, go to bars, and just meet people and see what they're doing in other countries. And I feel like we're still doing that to this day, every day, you know?
Oh,
every day.
Mm-hmm. So when I first went to France, it was like 96, I guess, and I don't remember. I mean, France to me was about food.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going into the hospitality
and wine,
food, wine, right? It wasn't really cocktails. You went in somewhere for a cocktail, and it
would be
was
a tiponche or a planner, and it was right? Like a little. Yeah, but you could still get them in bistros, but it was done so poorly. It was just like they were there, but it wasn't a thing at all.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but now. It's much more significant. It's still nothing like London or something, you know, or New York or whatever. But
it's on the way.
Yeah. So that's my question for you. So when did that start happening in Paris? When did they start kind of developing? Because you just said, you developed a little cocktail program. And did you do that because you'd done some traveling and you'd seen?
I'd always done cocktails. I used to run pubs, but we did Sex on the Beach.
Okay.
We did Cosmopolitans.
Okay.
We did Mojitos. We did. We always did cocktails, but it was just something that you did.
Yeah.
Normally, females would drink cocktails, the dudes would drink pints.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, you know, those pubs at nighttime, DJs and just, you know, like that.
Yeah, I saw a really awful Bon Jovi cover band at a cocktail bar, and I was like, this is kind of amazing in Paris.
That's kind of cool.
It was funny. I was just like, all right then, okay, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it full on. But I don't remember getting good cocktails, but they kind of...
So apparently, like, I obviously didn't have money to do that, but you could always, at all the palaces and five-star hotels, you could always get cocktails.
You go to the Ritz and you can get good cocktails.
You could get good cocktails. The Conservatory, which I also didn't know about before, they've been doing it. I think they're really the first ones in Paris, besides the hotels. I mean, I'm not sure how many years. I want to say 40 or 50, but don't quote me on that. But it's very old school, and it was a family thing.
Oh, wow.
Joseph from Maybell had studied there. Not studied, worked there. And a lot of other people went on there to own their own bars after working in this place.
All right. So
but then for me, the one that I knew and most people did was ECC, Experimental Cocktail Club.
Which I didn't get to go to.
That's where I met Karina from Candelaria and a lot of other bartenders.
And now there's a nice little scene.
Yeah, totally.
Nice little scene.
And most of those people have opened up their own bars as well.
Yeah. So you're a part of this nice little scene, which is really very cool. Very cool. And what is Dirty Dick? Like, what was the origin of that?
Dirty Dick,
wasn't it like a massage parlor or something?
No, it was a straight up brothel.
It was straight up brothel?
Yeah. It was a sex club.
Nice.
We're, you know, there's not a lot of documentation about people who went to these kind of places.
Yeah.
It's hard to find, you know, I had this one guy who talked to us online who was there in the 50s, you know, basically it opened in the 30s. We know after a while, you know, it was a sex club for sure. It was owned by the Corsican Mafia. they had a big part of the resistance in World War II, you know.
Nice.
And that whole part of Pigalle. It's just what I learned from word on the street, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't there. I'm always trying to find out the history. And, like, people don't take pictures when they go to these kind of places or even repeat these stories. But so he said he used to go when he was in the Navy. They used to have leave, you know. I know I've seen some old movies after World War II. That's where all the GIs would go to get laid, party, get drunk, you know, eat. I've seen old movies with the NPs, like actual military police, always driving around. They were kind of watching the soldiers.
Yeah.
And it was just a red light district, you know, that's how it always was. And you also had the Moulin Rouge, so you had cabarets as well. It wasn't all, you know, like hardcore sex, but it was there for sure.
Yeah, because you guys are not too far from Moulin Rouge at all. It's just right around the corner.
Yeah.
It's like, what, 2 blocks away or something like that?
We even had, in the back, we had hidden ceilings we found in the end that weren't on the blueprints.
Ooh, with, that's cool. Where, so they probably stashed it was up there?
Yeah.
Stashed weapons
drugs,
or something, probably.
Weapons.
Yeah.
And it was all actually, when we were soundproofing, we found it was a hatch door.
Oh, wow.
And with the original wallpaper.
Oh, really?
You know, it was reinforced. The floors were reinforced with wood. And,
wow.
It was, it's a trip, just, you know, we started looking like maybe we'll find a safe or, because we're opening up things that aren't on the blueprints, but then, you know, didn't want to find any dead bodies or anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Seriously. I have some friends who found a basement in a bar they bought. They wasn't on the plans. And they went down the basement and they found a full stash of booze, like dusty old booze that they think was from like the 20s or something.
That's awesome.
That they had found, So they just kind of cleaned it up and put it there. Basically, they turned it into the owner's lounge where they would go down and smoke weed.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I want to go there.
Yeah, well, next time you're in LA,
I'll be there next week.
Part of Plantations OFTD Rum.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved in that?
That was I was
world travels and meeting everyone.
No, I mean, I don't, you know, that's a great question. I was it's great to be a part of it. Alexander Gabriel, you know, is a hero of mine. He's an amazing guy. He works magic in for me, Plantation Rum and all those other products.
Yeah, Plantation's fantastic.
I mean,
yeah.
In the triple sec, in the Citadel gin, and all the cognacs. I mean, it's good stuff. I started when I found that those products. I was at UFO, and I was, as a lot of people, you know, instantly. It works great in cocktails. So I kind of always was a big fan. I was always supporting them. It's not like even when we opened Dirty Dick, we were using them as in a lot of cocktails, and not because we were paid to do that or we were on
you
a contract.
Like, no, because it's good stuff.
And at Dirty Dick, you know, we don't have contracts with anybody. We serve what the fuck we want to serve. But I had met Alexander on various occasions in Cognac and in Paris, and he asked if I'd like to be a part of this secret
formulation.
Not revival, or, you know, it was just this secret brotherhood to make a new rum that's an old rum that can stand up in old tiki drinks.
Yeah. And it's fantastic in tiki drinks. And because you taste it, it adds so much.
I mean, that's what we were.
It's fantastic, period.
When we all met together, I mean, this is what the road we were going for, obviously. I mean, you can see the crew that he picked.
Who did he pick? It's you, it's Martin Kay. And the bumps on there too, right?
Of course.
Which one berries in there?
Paul McFadden, Alexander Gabriel, David Wondrich.
Like David Wondrich, that's right. There's like seven of them.
Yeah.
I think it's part of that. Was Paul McGee in there too?
Paul McGee, of course, McGee? From Lost Lake and Milk Bar.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so that might be everybody. So that's a roster of rum superstars right there. People who really, really know their rum. So of course it came out amazing. How fun was that?
It was a trip, you know, we're up for Best New Spirit here at We're at Tails right now.
Yeah.
That's on Saturday. It would be cool to win, but it's funny, even if we don't, it's all good, but it was actually conceived a block away from here in Arnold's Arnold's restaurant. The first tasting, he rented out a private room and we were in there all day.
Yeah.
We got to try all the old rums from, you know, Ray and Nephew 17, old Lemon Hearts, a lot of old Barbados, and just like, it was the tasting of a lifetime, you know?
Oh, I bet.
And that's how it started. And we were all around a big table, tasting. And then we started to blend a little bit and look where, you know, what vision, which way we wanted to go. And we were all pretty close on the same page, which was strange to have that many people together kind of really
that's
on
awesome.
The same wave.
I mean, it's so good. So how long did that take for you guys to do? Because everyone lives all over the world.
We met up there. We met up in Cognac. And then after the direction, you know, Alexander Gabriel's, he's the magician. And he put together more samples of which we wanted to go. Then we re-met up again in the Cognac and decided on the final blend.
Nice. So good. So this reminds me when you said, you know, you're like this brotherhood of people creating this rum and then the work behind the bar. Because we're talking about booze and music. This is the whole point of this podcast is booze and music. So you guys were like a band, essentially, creating this product. And I come across that again and again. When I started doing this, I thought, well, I've met so many musicians who work behind the bar or who own bars or guys who work behind the bars.
It is a trip, right? Music, art in general, yeah.
It's that collaborative effort that creates something
100%
for the world, right?
Yes.
So something else that comes up is like making your cocktail program. You also said that you and the guys that work at your bar, that they've been with you more or less from the beginning. So you guys
some
are
of them, yeah.
Too.
I mean, so, when we opened before, I put together a crew and I told them my vision, and we were in somebody else's bar with every ingredient in the sun and different syrups and just made a menu, you know, and without even being behind the bar. The first night was a fucking, for us, it was a disaster, and everyone else loved it. It was one of the scariest things I've ever done in my life. And we made it through, but we didn't fail miserably, but it was, we were literally hooking up the dishwasher 2 minutes when there was a line of people to come in. We hadn't even put the booze in the rack yet or made one drink behind this bar before the place got fucking ram-fucked with people. And we had the zombie with each ingredient, and you had to put each one in the shaker. You know, and of course, slept about an hour, went in, and we changed, you know, and then day by day, you know, okay, pre-batch this, da-da, blend this, blend that, and, you know, and we still are doing that to this day. I'm not kidding. Like, we're trying to make, you know, we're still doing that.
I love it. So you've got a band, but you also...
The Band of Misfits.
Yeah, right. But you don't play music, do you?
I'm actually a percussionist. I play a djembe, conga. Anything that's this percussion, I like to play.
I was like, I don't even know what that is. What is that?
A djembe, it's a drum from Africa.
Okay.
And it's similar to conga, bongos.
Fun.
I used to, in San Francisco, I was in art school, sculpting, drawing, painting.
So yeah, so you had that and everything. So you do percussion, but you know a lot of musicians too.
Some, yeah.
Is this your desert days? Is how you kind of crossed into, I know a lot of musicians, but I work in the music business, so.
I met the guys that you're probably thinking about in Paris, actually. And it was weird.
Guys?
Yeah, Queens of the Stone Age. I mean, I met them in Paris.
Well, that's the thing, because that's right, it's the Dave Ketching connection. Because everyone knows Dave Ketching. I think.
He's a beautiful person.
He is a beautiful person. And a beautiful beard.
And he has a beautiful wife, too.
Oh, yeah. He's got it all. I mean, Rancho de la Luna, also, beautiful studio, beautiful space. What a good person, right? So that's kind of, I've met him several times over the years through other friends. You know him. So, I remember you saying, like, oh, yeah, I brought Queens to Broken Shaker, like in Miami.
No, we fucking randomly ran into people because half of them were playing with Iggy Pop. And I was on my way to Puerto Rico, and we did with Don Q, we did a little takeover at the 21, which is at the Broken, at the Freehand, we could say that. I just call it Broken Shaker, but they're obviously different businesses. I knew that they were playing with Iggy Pop the next day, but we were going to be gone. I was like, well, that fucking really sucks, but whatever. We finished our shift, literally 2 in the morning, walked down. Josh turns around, and the rest of them, like, what the, and Troy, like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like,
see, I used to know Troy when he was with Failure.
Yeah.
You remember that band Failure?
Yeah.
So, I loved Failure so much. I used to follow them around. I interviewed them quite a few times back in my radio days in San Francisco. I was at Calyx. So, since you lived there, you know
okay.
Calyx.
I was
there for 10 years. So, I was on the radio while you were living there. So,
that's it was crazy.
Like, I was there, I was on usually during the day, like from 3 to 6. I love doing drive time. And I interviewed them all the time, whenever they come through. So that's how I knew Troy. So I met Troy, and then he left because he's doing Queen stuff, but who else did he do? He was in some other band, too, for a while. Perfect Circle, maybe, something like that. So he left, he moved on, and then cut to, like, 2 years later, Kevin Murphy, the guy who owns the Tonga Hut in North Hollywood, sells his house to
he bought
Troy
it.
Von
I know.
Schmidt. He sold it to Troy.
I was going
to
tell you that story, actually.
I'm like, are you kidding me? He bought a tiki bar, and he wanted to keep all the tiki stuff. I don't know. I haven't been there since.
So Troy, when I met him, after a few times, we're having drinks, and he's like, Scotty, you know, I actually have a tiki bar with a hidden bar inside of it at my pool. And I'm like, what? And then he, you know, as more and more we meet, he's telling me more. And then, it turns to find out the guy from the Tonga Room used to own it. Bought it from him. I gave him a bottle of OFTD a few months ago when I was over there. We went to the studio when they were recording Villains. And I was like, take this, put it in your tiki bar. I want to go check it. He keeps saying, come, I want to go.
Is he in town?
No. They're on tour. They're in.
Again? I can't keep track.
Well, they're releasing Villains. Coming out on the 25th, and they're on world tour right now.
Yeah, so here we go. Now we were able to throw in a plug for Queens of the Stone Age. Buy their new record.
Do
into your bar, I was telling you I was super happy to go in, and we walked in and my friend said, "What is this band? I know this band," and it was the Gun Club. I'd never be expecting to hear the Gun Club when I walk into any bar. Really, honestly, at this point. I used to DJ at the Burgundy Room in Hollywood, the old punk rock dive room, right? So, of course, you would hear it there because you'd be expecting it. In fact, because of DJing at that bar, I cannot listen to the Ramones or the Buzzcocks anymore. And it's nothing against those bands. They're obviously
amazing. It's
because
it's on repeat.
That's like it. That's all anybody ever wanted to hear. So when we were in there, I remember asking the guy behind the bar. Well, I'm going to call him Boss because I kept fucking up his name. It's really easy.
Bassoon.
Bassoon.
Yeah. Boss. Well, he goes by Boss. Yeah.
So he's like, they call me Boss. I'm all good. Because you're going to tell me your real name many, many times, and I'm going to say it wrong every single time. And he's like, oh, we just put together this list. You know, it's our own stuff. And so what is your music program there? What do you guys listen to in the bar?
You know, we try to keep it, obviously, in the... We play Exotica a lot, especially in the opening.
Yeah, yeah.
Old school rock and roll, rockabilly.
Yeah.
Depending, you know, we kind of go with the vibe and when the people who are coming in, and we try to match it with that. The weekends, now that we have a 24-hour license, but we only stay open an extra hour. On the weekends, we turn the music up loud after midnight.
Yeah.
We'll play some reggae, some dancehall, some punk, some cramps, but really loud. And we're not normally, we weren't ever do that before. This is, you know.
Yeah.
But that's just on the weekends and, you know, just keep it in the vibe of what's going on.
Yeah, so what do you listen to at home?
Everything.
Everything.
I mean, I like everything from bluegrass to dance hall.
What are your favorites right now?
You know, it's. I listen to everything. It's really a tough question. I like everything.
Tell us what the safety is right now, so keep going. But you listen to, well, I listen to everything too, so I understand what you're saying. And when someone says to me, oh, what are your top five that you have to take with you when you die, or, you know, top 10?
I would be a different genre of music on each one.
Right. So for me, might be a couple, you know, three or four that are consistently on my list, but other stuff changes, and it might just be, I mean, right now I'm sitting here going, you know, there are some electronica albums I absolutely adore, there are, you know, singer-songwriter things that I only worship, maybe they might, there's an artist from here, from New Orleans, Hooray for the Riff Raff, she has one record that I love, other records I'm like, me, I don't care about it. So, but that record I love so much, I'd be like, I might want to keep that record forever and take it with me, you know? But at the same time, I'm like, I need to have Duran Duran's Rio on the island with me, that I won't survive otherwise. So what are a couple that, like...
I like hardcore, I like punk rock.
But give me a couple of records. Okay, what's a record I need to listen to? I know, you think I've heard everything, but maybe I haven't.
You probably have. I mean, that's a really tough question.
You don't know me.
Who blew me away? Let's talk about live. Let's do that instead
of
albums. Like, I was just at Fela Kuti's son, Sheyun Kuti, at his show in Paris. That was amazing.
You being a percussionist as well, that's got to be.
I was at Erykah Badu last week in Paris. I seen Guns N' Roses last week in Paris.
Oh, my friend, who's in Paris right now, she was at that show too. She has some connection to somebody.
I grew up with them. I would have never bought a $100 ticket. Someone bought one for me, and I was fucking blown away. They played 3.5 fucking hours. It was dope.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was at reggae. I was at Master Ace show a few weeks ago. I mean, I really like everything. And
awesome.
I'm glad that I'm still able to go out and see live music. My first concert, funny story.
Okay.
My uncle worked for a radio station in Cleveland. This was in the, I would want to say 86 maybe.
Yeah.
And he set up the satellite for the live, whatever.
Yeah.
So it was Susan Vega, wait no, who sang Black Velvet? Black Velvet?
Oh, the Black Velvet.
Yeah.
Alana Miles.
Okay, so she had
that's
the name
song
of her band.
Yeah.
They opened, but it was actually, I know his name. It's the lead singer of Led Zeppelin.
Robert Plant.
So we were backstage with Robert Plant.
Oh, shut up.
So I'm fucking, I think I'm 11. You know what I'm saying? And I'm standing there. This guy comes up, shirt unbuttoned all the way. And he comes up, and this is before they start recording. Oh, this is Robert Plant. Oh, how you doing? I don't know who the fuck this guy is. All I knew is he smelled really, really bad. He smelled like rotten onions. He hadn't showered in a month. And I'm like, why? He doesn't even have his shirt up. He's so casual. So they do the interview. They put me on the air live, and they're like, we're here with the biggest star, WKA7, you know, Scott Shooter. Hi. I'm like,
hi, how you doing?
They're like, so what's your favorite? You're at the Robert Plant Show. No, no, what's your favorite song? And I'm like, they gave me the mic. I had one of those moments like, oh, yeah. Oh fuck. And I turned white. What's my answer?
What is your favorite song in 1986? You say like,
I didn't know. I didn't know who the fuck this guy was.
Who that guy was.
I said all of them.
Oh.
Great answer, right? And they kept going on with the interview. I like totally got myself. That could have ruined my whole career right there. That could have been it for me. That would have. I think that was the deciding factor in my life right there.
That is a good.
That was the first time I smelled weed too. That I remember. We were like in the fifth row, and I'm like, "What is that delightful smell?" Wow.
Have you ever incorporated like a THC syrup or anything into your?
I mean,
we've
done it in personal ways. I would never bring that in any way by the bar just because it's so illegal.
So, yeah.
You know, if there's ever, if there's a way to do it with, you know, low, I would love
very
to do it.
Low.
But, you know, for personal consumption, yeah, but it's not something that, it's very illegal in France, so we would never want to do anything like that.
I got slipped an edible when I was like 18.
And some of them are really fucking strong. You don't know what the fuck who
that's
made
exactly
it.
That's exactly what happened to
have
me.
Have a panic attack and shit.
So I didn't really smoke weed. I'm not really a weed person. And
me neither.
That's my sister's job. Yeah, I can tell that you're not into it at all. That's more my sister's job. I do the spirits. She does the
that's
weed.
Cool.
My brother does all of the above. So
I want to hang out with your brother.
I know. Yeah. He's in New York. The next time you go to New York.
Okay.
So... and everybody loves my brother way more than they love me, so there you go. But so I got slipped a cookie where they'd actually melted the pot into the butter.
In butter, that's how you do it. Yeah.
The right way, so you didn't get like using your teeth or anything.
And you wouldn't know how it tastes good. You're like, wow, this is great.
Like a cookie, yeah. Right? So it was like the middle of the week, the middle of the day. There are these cookies. So for my day, you want a cookie? And the guy who gave it to me was like, I was in the dorms. He was like our dealer, right? But I didn't think he was going to give me a pot cookie. I really had no idea. Like hour later, I was like fetal position on the bed. It was like, I was so messed up.
If you don't, it's not a thing that you should. Children out there, do not eat edibles if you don't smoke weed.
Edibles.
And if you do, take tiny bites, baby steps.
You've got to train yourself to that.
You can never go back. You can always go forward. Word to the wise.
Well, this guy came in. This guy lived across the hall from me. And he started doing that. You're running through a forest and putting his hands in my face.
Of course. It's like if you're tripping on acid. People always like, bro, you're on acid?
Yeah.
Like, fuck. Yeah.
I punched him in the face and broke his nose.
I like your fucking style. High five. And he fucking deserved it, too. First of all, you gave me a cookie without telling me. Then you're doing the run through the fucking forest bullshit.
Right?
And he was going to smack you in the face after. That's how it goes.
Yeah, totally. And I was just like, I just went bam, like this. Blood everywhere. So then I'm just like, you know.
That's a horrible experience.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
That's traumatizing, even.
I can tell this story, and it's so fun now, because it was like 30 years ago.
Oh, it's so traumatizing.
So the next day, though, I saw the guy, and I was still jacked up the next day. Last,
no, you know? You make a body high. Even like your pinkies are high, your feet are high, all your joints are high.
He had like black eyes and all this stuff, and I'm all, I did that to you, and he goes, I deserved it. I'm all, you did deserve it.
I'd have been like, yeah, punk, don't ever cross me again. I'll shank you next time with a spoon.
All right, let's go back to shows. Let's talk about live music. What are some favorites? You just told me stuff you saw recently, but what are some favorite concerts that you've seen?
One of my first. Favorite shows of all time was Cypress Hill just came out. I was 16. Beastie Boys. I got tickets. Beastie Boys were one of my favorite hip hop groups of all time. I've seen them like seven times.
They're so fucking good. Did you ever get to see Beastie Boys when they did the punk band?
Yes.
They did it in San Francisco when you were living there. They played at the bottom of the hill.
We didn't. We were there. We went to the show and somebody ran into us in a car and the girl we were with said she broke her or hurt her back and sued the guy and it was all bullshit. And there was a secret show, and you had to have a password. I was fucking there, and I didn't get in.
Because my friend Peter didn't took fucking get in. The photographs at the bottom of the hill.
I don't want to hear it.
Well, no, he just took pictures at the bottom of the hill, so that's how I got to.
I was there and didn't get in.
I can't remember the name of that punk band that they their side thing. But anyway, back to Cypress Hill and Beastie Boys.
So we didn't know. All I knew was Beastie Boys, I had a set of football cards that I had bought a few years before when I was a paper boy. And I had seen that they had went up 7 times in value. I think I took them to the store. I got like $140. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I bought a ticket for me and my girlfriend at the time. It just turned 16.
Yeah.
And it was down at the Universal Amphitheater down in L.A. And it was actually Cypress Hill opened up, Henry Rollins Band, and then fucking Beastie Boys Check Your Head, where they played all their own instruments and did punk.
I was at that show. So wait, where was it that you saw that?
I think it was at the in Universal.
Down L.A.?
Yeah, for sure.
So, oh, the Universal Amphitheater.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like I saw that show, but it would have been in San Francisco when I saw it.
So that was fucking like...
Because I remember that lineup. That was a good fucking show.
Well, funny thing is, as soon as we got in, it was like meant to be. Like, Sindog comes out, and he's like, y'all motherfuckers, rush the stage. So, of course, we rush the stage. All the security's at the pit. I get into the pit, which is right in the front. There's no seats in the pit.
Yeah.
I get into the pit. Watch Cypress Hill. He was throwing joints out to the crowd. Amazing show. They just came out. Henry Rollins comes out, and of course there's a massive pit. There's a massive pit, mosh pit.
Yeah.
So during the show, some dumb motherfucker threw a Birkenstock and hit him in the face. Right? This is a true story. I was standing about 4 feet away from the guy. This really happened.
You threw the Birkenstock?
Yes.
Okay.
Henry Rollins takes his microphone that's on a cord.
Yeah.
He throws the microphone, hits the guy in the nose, blood splatters everywhere.
Holy shit, seriously?
The guy goes like this, there's blood pouring everywhere. He pulls the microphone back, and he comes in, you know he doesn't curse,
he's a
gentleman. He goes, I got pretty good aim, huh, scumbag? He's like, your mother's a whore, and so is your sister. And I'm like, holy, this guy's a human muscle wearing Speedos.
Yeah, right.
With a search and destroy tattoo on his back. Like, why would you throw a fucking sandal at this fucking guy? And he got him, you know? And then disrespected his mother and his sister. And then Beastie Boys came on and killed it. They played, it was Check Your Head. They played all their instruments. They had up, they played
show.
Their punk stuff.
Yeah,
and it was fucking dope.
What a killer show. All right, on that, gotta wrap it up because I have to go somewhere. But this is awesome. We could totally keep going because there's so many good shows out there in the world.
I've been to a million of them.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Scott.
Of course. I'm so glad that we got to chat.
Me too. It was fun.
And thanks. So, is there anything you want to tell the people? Like, do they look up a website, buy the OFTD, come to Paris?
If you're ever in Paris, come through.
Well, honestly, you're all over the world, though. I missed you in Paris because you were in Tel Aviv. And then you were out in Brooklyn. And I met you in Florida. And you'll be in LA next week. You're never in your fucking hometown.
Just spreading the love, man.
If people want to, and actually we ran into each other in Miami as well.
Yeah.
So if people want to find you on your forever ambassadorship, is there a way to do that?
I mean, you can look on my Facebook, but besides that, I'm in Paris. Come through. We're all, like I said, it's a big family. We have a dirty dick, and you're, you know, I hope you have a great time.
Yeah.
Come through and
come say hello.
Go
to the red light district. It's still got lots of sex shops.
Come say aloha and go to the sex shop.
I like the Eiffel Tower dildos.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Scott. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
That's that.
Mahalo.
Such thanks, merci, mahalo, etc. to Scotty Shooter for sitting down with me. We had such a fun time, and it's so great that we were able to become friends after doing that. Go to Paris. I mean, like, you need an excuse to go to Paris, but go to Paris and go to Dirty Dick. It's a great bar, tons of fun, and I went there last summer with a girlfriend of mine who doesn't drink. And my drinks are fantastic, but her drinks were even better. They made her wonderful alcohol-free concoctions, and her garnishes were out of this world. I swear that the guy behind the bar really had a secret life as a flower arranger or something. Anyway, Dirty Dick's, great time if you go to Paris. Scotty Shooter, he travels all over the world doing presentations, lectures, guest bartending stints. You can find him in LA all the time. So go check out the Dirty Dick Facebook page. They are also on Instagram, Dirty Dick Paris. So follow those things if you want to be up to date. And I will have Scotty's playlist on Spotify. And you can find that by going over to my Facebook page. Thanks again so much for that. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you in part by The Blind Rabbit, a speakeasy located in the Anaheim Packing District. The Blind Rabbit has twice been given Best Mixology Awards by the OC Register, as well as several nominations for their innovative cocktail program. For more info and to make reservations, go to theblindrabbit.com. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.